Joining us is the bench coach of the San Francisco Giants, Ron Wotus. And, Woe, I said on the show, I've been on almost every night. I'll be on tonight, of course, and then tomorrow as well. And hopefully the Warriors will take care of business tomorrow and Ray Woodson will get his job back. But what a week of baseball, huh, with the two with the Red Sox and these first two?
Yeah. You know what? You know, the fans love, I think, interleague play for the fact you get to see teams that you don't see very often, and the Boston Red Sox, and they have a very good team this year, leading the National League, the American League East, and it's great to see Big Poppy, a guy who's in his final season of baseball, come through San Francisco. They gave him a nice, honored him before the game, and saw some of his accolades, rightfully so. I mean, he's been that type of player throughout his career, and of course the Dodgers. I mean, what more could you want? The Red Sox and then the Dodgers.
Seriously, it's five, you know, the four games have been unbelievable. Every game has had a personality to it. But there's so much that went on between these two teams. And looking at the game yesterday and the insides of the game, let's jump ahead a little bit to Urias, because you prepare, and I don't know much about him, and I just have the stats about him, and it looks like you can strike some people out. But what do you know about Julio Urias, as John says?
Well, not as much as we'd like. Obviously, we have a little video on him. You know, our advanced scouts have given us the reports and what they saw, but pretty much what you're hearing, it comes as advertised. We don't have any other details of any of the nuances of him because we haven't seen him pitch all that much, but he throws all four pitches, you know, electric stuff. He's got a power arm. He can strike it with the fastball, with those curveball, slider, changeup, and they're all four major league pitches. So the stuff is there. It's a matter of control and command and pitching in the major leagues, which is a different league than he's had to deal with previously. So the stuff is there, and if he can locate and pitch with that stuff, he's going to be a good one.
He's going to be around for a while. He's 19 years old, and his innings are limited. He will not be pitching.
90 pitch. Yeah. I think that's his limit for today. Yeah.
Well, his innings, even by the end of the year, we won't see him. Believe me, he'll hit his innings limit. You will not see him at the end of the year. But they need him now, and that's why he's up here. A couple of things. One, the David Ortiz. We'll take one more stab at this one. The moment when he came out of the dugout and Lopez came in, I said to Lopez, look, you're older. You should be going into your golden years here. You shouldn't be the guy in the middle of everything every night. But that was a baseball moment. I liked it.
Yes, it was. We've seen a lot here in this ballpark. And the first person that comes to mind is Barry Bonds. And some of the battles he had with Gagne, that one game against the Dodgers when he was closing. And fans, everybody, even us as coaches on the field and players, you love big moments. That's why you play the game. You know, they're not always in the playoffs or the World Series. They can be throughout the course of the season. And that was the game on the line. He's not starting because he's DHing. They can pop him out as a pinch hitter whenever they want, and they did. And we ended up getting him out. And getting through it. We walked him once. I think we got him out the other time. Of course, the run came in, but it was a big moment. And, you know, it was fun to see him here at AT&T.
How about that slide from Chris Young to avoid the tag from Brandon Crawford? Hard to criticize Brandon Crawford, but maybe he should have just been a little bit more patient, knowing that Ortiz is running down the line and he's not the fastest or the swiftest. Go ahead and analyze that play for us, Ron.
Well, it's easy to draw that conclusion because he didn't tag him. But the reality of the play is, as soon as Big Poppy came to the plate with Javi out there, you know, I was a little disappointed that he used him there. It was a good move on his part because it's easy to double up, but you shift on this guy. The shortstop's way over. You got to play the second baseman way over in the hole. You can't play the second baseman in his normal straight position. If you do, he pulls one between first and second 80% of the time. So you're in a little bit of a difficult place to turn a double play, and that's kind of what happened. So he hits the ball on the second base side. Crawford can't, there's no one at second to throw to because he's on the second base side. So his only option is to run at the runner. Very few times as a shortstop do you get a ground ball and run at the runner at first base to tag him and throw to first. The play doesn't come up. So your game clock, your timing of how much time you have is all thrown off. And really, I got to credit Young with getting the run in. You know, Brandon didn't have much more time than he had. Once he did throw it, it was pretty close at first
base.
So he had to hurry to get to him. Young did what you're supposed to do. Hit the dirt, get down, and avoid the tag. He did a great job.
Nice.
Yeah, that was a great baseball play.
Yes,
and,
it was.
I'm glad you analyzed it for us. A couple of things that happened yesterday. We have the professor here. This is always good. Go to school here. It's not 9 a.m. in the morning, so we got people more awake right now. So get ready. The slides yesterday, and it determined the game, in my opinion, the way the Giants play versus the way the Dodgers play. First of all, the old Tinkers to Evers to Chance, you know, the old poem that they had of the Cubs of 1908. And no sweeter words could ever be said by a Cub fan if the ground ball was Tinkers to Evers to Chance. It was a double play. Crawford to Belt to Panic. Panic to Belt is the same thing for me. Dodgers didn't do that. Seager to Utley to Gonzalez is not happening that same way. The feeds were not great. Utley juggled, but I'm telling you something. Belt and Posey came in like a freight train, and I love that baseball play.
Well, yeah, and I think everybody loves that play, and you know that's why it's been a little bittersweet with this changing the rule. We're keeping the players healthy, you know, in the middle infield, but a lot of people love the guys coming in hard to break up the double play. Don't let them turn the double play. So, you know, our runners did everything they could within the rule to try to break it up, yeah. And that helps. It's, of course, it's not like it was years ago where you could really flip the guy and get after him. But you said it, Marty. I think the feeds were a little bit off. The timing was a little bit off. And when you're playing a game like we did yesterday, any little chink in the armor, you don't turn a double play, you don't get a guy over, you make a mistake, could be the game, and we got a run because of it.
Yesterday was deja vu all over again, and I said it, my analysis was Span a huge hit. I mean, that was a huge double off a very tough closer, just as Belt had it the night before. The difference was Span did it, and you had your guys coming up. And I just felt this is going to be a little different, not to take anything away from Blanco and Crawford or anybody else. But I said, now you do it at the top of the order.
Yep.
Now you got action, and it turned out that way. You must be guys talking about the win.
Well, it was a great win, obviously. You know, it's a little bit different for us right now. We're used to when we get a lead late in the game in the years past, we've closed it down, you know, and the teams didn't come back and tie it. Right now, we're finding our way a little bit late. You know, we haven't been as shut down as we've been in the past, and these guys will get there eventually. But right now, it's been a little bit different. So, and we haven't been scoring a lot. I mean, let's face it, we're playing low scoring games, and we're not adding on. We're not putting them away. So when they took the lead in the ninth inning, for us to come back the way we did, as you said, Marty, we had the top of the order. We had the right guys up against Jansen, and they came through. And it was a huge win for us. I mean, it's a two-game swing. They won the first one. Now we have the game today. You lose the game yesterday. And, you know, these are games. Come September, you're going to wish you had them back.
Right. Four-game lead in the West for the Giants. And tell us the psychology of what switching a bat can do for a guy like Buster Posey. Is it a different model? Is it a different size and weight? Or is it just a different piece of wood?
Well, I'm not familiar with what you're talking about. He changed. I know he had to change his bat because one got stuck in the screen on the strikeout.
Well, he got that back in between innings. They brought out a huge ladder, and someone climbed up and got the bat down and gave it back to him.
Right.
And then next time he was up, he smoked the ball to the shortstop, and then he flung the bat back to the dugout. Right. I mean, you don't see him do that often.
Right.
So he said that bat needed a timeout.
Oh,
sit in the corner.
Right. He did. Okay. Okay, well, you know, he's a competitor, and he wasn't happy with the performance of the bat. I understand that, so I'm glad he did it because either that bat woke up or he picked a different bat to get the game winner in the 10th. So that was a good move by Buster.
Yeah, right. Absolutely. You know, for him, I know, and the one where the bat got loose, the thumb has bothered him, and the bat got loose and got caught up on the screen. But, well, I thought, just from a fan standpoint, watching him yesterday, he wanted to win yesterday. Not that he doesn't want to win every game, but those at-bats for him yesterday, you very rarely see that kind of emotion, and he just smoked the last one right up the middle.
Yeah. No, there's no doubt about it. As you said, the game was there to win or lose, and when you come up in those scenarios against the Dodgers, the importance of the game, you know, you don't want to make the last out. You don't want to be the guy that has a chance to win the game and not get it done. And Buster's not a 260 hitter. We all know that. He's been battling this thumb. It's not 100%. And, you know, that can frustrate you, too. You know, you're not feeling good, and you're not swinging the bat the way you want to. And what a huge hit to win the game and get us back to even in this series.
I had a lot of fun with the postgame show last night. There were so many things to talk about and things that happened during the game. We talked about the slides, getting a couple of walks in the first inning, getting Duffy to get a hit to drive in a run. He's hitting well at home and not so well on the road. Contos came in and got a big inherited runner. But there were just parts of this game that just led me to Josh Osich. And Kiker Hernandez is on third base, and there's trouble now. Come on, you got first and third, and you got trouble. And Seager just smokes one back to the mound. He snow cones it, and then things start to happen.
Yeah, well, you know, Josh probably deserved a little better faith. You know, when Utley snuck that ground ball through the infield, and, you know, we're playing a step to pull, and he hits the ball up the middle. Now you have first and third with nobody out, and you got a one-run game. You know, you expect that they're going to get that run in. So Josh made a pitch on Seager, got the comebacker, and made a great play. And he did exactly what he was supposed to do. Yeah, you check the runner at third. If he's not going, you could go to second base for the double play. That's why the runner at third, 99% of the time, if it's a double play ball, he's going to try to score because he'd rather be thrown out at home and have first and second with one out than to stand there and let you throw the ball, you know, to second and first for a double play, have two outs with a man on third. You know, Hernandez looked like he got caught in between. It looks like he was going and got caught in no man's land and said, instead of continue to go, he said, let me try to get back. And Josh did a great job, made a nice throw. Hey, how often do they make that throw?
Yeah.
They never make that throw. Even in spring training when we're in that backfield doing all these plays, you don't really make that throw. So it's an athletic play. I mean, these guys are athletes. And that's what you're asked to do. But that was a huge out in that inning, no doubt about it.
Yeah, great game. Very great game. And we got, obviously, PV and Urias today, the Giants with a four-game lead. Our bench coach, Ron Wotus, is here. I'm going to shift gears a little bit to a pitcher who can hit, and that is Madison Bumgarner.
Yep.
And you were there to watch his batting practice display in St. Louis. What did that look like?
Yeah, well, it looked like McGuire hitting or Barry Bonds or somebody like that. You know, there's only been a couple balls hit up in that third deck. You know, the interesting thing about that in BP, you know, they have the sign out there in left field at Cardinals Busch Stadium says Big Mac Land. That's because that's where McGuire used to hit him routinely. But that's in the second deck. It's not in the third deck. So he's hitting them above the second deck. And actually, Mac Williamson hit one up there as well before he did. And because Mac Williamson did it, Bumgarner said he is going to do it. So that's where that all came about. And by golly, if he didn't do it on one of his last things, that's a long, long way up there.
Bobby Evans and Bruce Bochy have said that, of course, it'd be fun to see Bumgarner in the home run derby, but you got to kind of balance the risks with the rewards. What do you think? Would you like to see him go out there and bang a couple at Petco in the All-Star?
Well, look, Bum is such a competitor. I think it would be great fun to watch him do that. But again, you know, Bobby and Boch are using their heads here.
Sure.
You know, what's at risk for us and for him? You say, oh, it's just a home run hitting contest. But yeah, man, those things take a lot out of you.
Yeah.
It is not as easy as you think, especially if you've never been in one. You know, I've watched a few of them now at those All-Star games, and you go down in the tunnel where these guys are hitting. These guys are tired. At the end of the night, if you continue, it wears you out. So, you know, we'll see what's going to happen. But anything Bumgarner does is fun to watch.
Marty, let me just ask one more on that. Obviously, there's a risk in a home run derby, but there's also risk in these dog piles and these walk-offs in which the Giants lead Major League Baseball in walk-offs. And last night, you got another one where Belt's doing a leapfrog and all that. Is there any way, I mean, you want them to be enthusiastic and enjoy these great wins, but is there any way you can get them to reduce all that monkeying around out there on the walk-offs?
You know what, Patrick, you're exactly right. I came home last night. night, and my wife said, Lori, she goes, what did Belt do to with the bus? He's gonna kill somebody. Jumped on his head or something. I didn't know anything about it. Yeah. You know, the guys are excited. They won the game, but you're right. We've seen it before. You know, they do have to be careful out there because you do get carried away. Hitting a guy on the head, someone's gonna end up with a concussion one of these days from getting smacked on the head, but. That's the game. It's going to be hard to curtail their enthusiasm. Sure. Hopefully they use good judgment when they win a game like that.
Yeah, who was the guy who jumped over the rail and got hurt? Was it Huff? Did Huff get it? I forget.
Carmen Q says yes.
And then we've seen
people do the walk-off homers, and it was the guy for the Angels broke his leg.
Kendry Morales.
That's right.
Changed his career.
Yeah, we shouldn't talk about these things because that's bad karma. We don't want any of this to happen to our guys, and we want to keep winning them late like that. Yeah. Enjoy that.
Okay. So. All right. So the fans, though, do want to see Bumgarner. They want to see him do something. So how about a cow milking contest? Come on. We used to have that. Used to be Sunday at the ballpark, right?
I've been involved with that
come
in minor
on, really?
Leagues. Oh, absolutely. I think we were in Clinton, Iowa. They brought a couple cows on the field. And who can milk the cow the fastest? One team against the other. Yeah, it's a lot of fun, Marty, by the way. A lot of fun.
What's the goofiest kind of thing you've seen at a ballpark? That's got to be up there. But what's the goofiest, I don't know, promotion that you've ever seen in the minors or whatever?
Well, I don't know if it's the goofiest, but milking the cows is near the top of the list. You know, right here in San Jose, when I managed there in 90 and 91, they used to bring out this brand-new car, and they would talk about how it was dent-proof. The material on the car was dent-proof. And what they would do is they'd have one of the players throw a ball into the side of the side door of the car as hard as they could to prove that this car cannot be dented.
Yeah.
Well, that went on, you know, for several weeks. And I can't remember who the player was, but he must have had a heck of an arm. But sure enough, he threw the ball into the side of the car. And there was a dent there, and they weren't happy about that. We never saw the promotion after that. So I think another one San Jose used to have, they had the players throw to the headlights of a truck. They'd be about 90 feet away. They still do that? Okay,
they
very
do.
Good. Yeah,
right. Wow.
Yeah. So that's good fun.
Yeah.
You know, there's a lot of stuff like that it's fun to entertain the fans.
Yeah, I grew up with it. You know, really on Sundays at the major league games, this is part of the promotion. Charlie Finley used to have animals. Used to have a zoo out in left field. You know, Charlie Finley was crazy with stuff like that. But if there's going to be a cow milking contest, I want Dwayne Kuiper on my team.
Yeah, there you go.
Right?
Yeah,
Dwayne, I want him. He's the captain of our team.
I bet you he's real good at that.
Trust me. I guarantee you, Dwayne has done it in his day.
Yeah.
And he'd be real good. All right, we'll take a break. Ron Wotus, the bench coach, is here. Don't go away. He's going to come back, and he is not only going to explain the balk rule, he's going to show everyone here at the Public House what Johnny Cueto did right here on this Sports Leader.
KNBR 680.
Now, Ron Wotus, you haven't demonstrated the Cueto shimmy and all that stuff yet, but it was what a beginning to that game. I mean, he hits Utley. Then again, he threw a wild pitch, which I thought was a pass ball, to tell you the truth. I don't know what happened on that. And then you get the balk and the run scores, and everyone is sitting there and saying, that's Cueto. That's what he does.
Right.
What happened?
Right. Well, it was frustrating for us, too, because, you know, this is part of what he's been doing. What I didn't know is there was some conversation about that in a World Series last year about his shimmying and shaking, and they talked about it as far as, is it a balk, is it not a balk? And I don't know what came of it because I wasn't involved with the games, obviously, but I heard this after the fact, so I think that's where it started because, you know, we all been seeing him do this. Now they're saying with men on base, he hasn't been doing this. And, you know, technically, if you look at the rule book, and I did call Eddie Montague, who's real great. He's lives in the area, known him for years, to try to get an explanation from him on why these guys call it. Nobody else is calling it. And anyways, it does read like that in the rule book. You're not supposed to, once you make you start your delivery home, you're not supposed to interrupt it or hesitate or do anything to keep the fluidity of throwing home. In reality, you can't go and stop, and then you can end up throwing to a base. So he does this mostly with nobody on base, and that's hard for me to believe. I'd have to look back to see if he's done it with men on base. I got to believe he's done it to a degree with men on base, but maybe not to the exaggeration where he actually stopped this time longer than normal, and thus they called the balk.
Yeah, he did a little salsa. I mean, there wasn't just a shoulder. There was a dance move going on there. That was not just one move.
Yeah, yeah. So, honestly, he'll be aware of that now with men on base, and he doesn't want to go to that extreme because, you know, technically you're interrupting you're altering your windup and interrupting your windup. And, they called it. It's a shame because it was a big moment in the game. I personally would have loved to have seen the umpires give us a heads up and say, look, you know, this has been out there about him doing this. He does this with men on base. We're going to call a balk. Yeah. You know, Johnny's been an all-star. He's been in the game an awful long time. With respect to him and to the game, Kershaw, Cueto, Giants, Dodgers, to respect to the game, I think this we could have got a heads up on this and said, look, this is breaking a rule. In the old days, an umpire would say, hey, tell the first baseman, hey, he does that again, tell him. He stops like that in his delivery, I'm going to balk him. Yeah. You know, there was no warning, men on second and third. Here's a run. And huge, huge call in the game. Obviously, we weren't happy about it.
Yeah, well explained, Will. As I said on the show Friday night, if the first baseman starts coming off the bag quickly, the umpire will say, hey, you better stay on the bag a little bit longer. I know we've talked about that with the umpires.
They've exactly. At second base, they would say the same thing. Of course, it's no longer a double play. The guy cheats off the bag soon, the old neighborhood play, and he'll say, hey, you got to give me a better touch next time. You can't cheat like that off the base. So it would have been nice to have gotten that in the magnitude of that game and situation.
Boy, baseball, what a sport, huh? And you know, and every day, and I said it yesterday, I've said it to you, I don't know what's going to happen today. I have no idea what's going to happen today, but it's Giants-Dodgers, and you never are out of it until that last swing, until the last out, and something weird is going to happen every time you guys play. It's amazing.
Well, you're right. I mean, it's amazing, isn't it? How that happens in the game. And these first two games have lived up to that billing. There's no question about it.
All right. Today is the anniversary of how are you? Nice to see you. Fans, isn't it nice being out here, Will?
Yeah,
seeing everybody
nice
come
out
in
here. It's beautiful out here. You have some people here listening. It's great to get the fans walking by. It's better than the bunker, I have to admit.
Come on,
much better than the bunker.
That's why they call it the bunker. This is live. We're outside in the sunshine. The anniversary of Ferris Bueller's Day Off, the movie. Did you see it?
Great movie.
Right.
I think a lot of us have seen that movie, and we all enjoy the story of that, right?
Yeah,
his day off, and boy, he had a good time.
He had a great time.
Well, there's a tip of the cap to baseball. He goes to Wrigley. You know, he takes his friends to Wrigley Field. So, and they catch the foul ball, and they show the joy, and they get up on the Jumbotron and get in trouble.
Oh, are they at Wrigley today? I'd be curious to know if they're doing anything for the anniversary of the movie at Wrigley
Field. They're playing the Braves today.
Yes, they're down
in Atlanta.
They are acknowledging it today down in Atlanta. That's right. They are playing, and they played the Braves in the movie.
Arrieta got him yesterday, and the Braves won on Friday night. So.
Yeah. And the other thing is, I forgot the kid's, what's the friend's name again?
Cameron. He's wearing a Gordie Howe sweater.
How about that?
Oh, Gordie Howe.
Who passed away on Friday. And, Marty, I'm glad you brought that up. Ron, just since I haven't had a chance to talk to you, and I don't know if Marty has, but Muhammad Ali, did you have any thoughts of his incredible life and career that you'd like to share?
Yeah, you know, I really enjoyed, watching, when they honor somebody and they show a person's life. And, you know, what a figure in our lifetime. And we had the luxury to have him come talk to the ballpark at the ballpark in spring training years back. He wasn't in great condition. He didn't say much, but he was there, and his daughter was there, and we talked about him, and guys got a chance to get their picture taken with him, and just an icon of a figure, and great man, great athlete. I mean, you think of all the people in our lifetime that we've seen, and he's got to be at the very top for his status as an athlete and as a humanitarian. So very, very interesting individual.
And he liked people.
Yeah.
You know, and I had the experience in, I think, 2002. He came into the A's locker room when I was doing those pregame shows, and I got a ball signed by him. And for the Liston fight, he trained in Miami Beach, and I knew where he trained, and our friends would run with him in the morning at the golf course. And we'd see him at the University of Miami football games in the end zone, and there was Cassius Clay because he trained at the Fifth Street Gym with Angelo Dundee. So I remember him quite well, but he liked people, and that's he stood for what he believed, but he sincerely liked people, and I've never seen a more savage fight than the Frazier fights.
Yeah. Well, you know, it's interesting to see great athletes like that somebody that was as open and endearing to the people as he was. You know, even when he's training for a fight, I mean, he had a lot of fun doing it. You know, other people, myself, I'm more reserved, right? You're not as outgoing, enjoying your experiences, but this guy was the greatest champ in the world, and he treated people like that, and he enjoyed it. And you don't see that every day.
No, he made it special. Larry King was on MLB. He was on with, you like Mad Dog? I love the guy.
Chris Russo?
Sure. Oh,
I love him. I love that show. I love him. So Larry King was on with him, and of course, Larry King was in Miami Beach like I was in the early 60s. Larry King was there, and he knew Ali, Cassius Clay, Angelo Dundee, and all those. So for the Liston fight at the weigh-in, if you remember, Clay went crazy. He was screaming, I'm going to beat this ugly guy, and I'm going to do this. And this everyone thought he was out of his mind.
Right.
Out of his mind. So Larry King is walking with the doctor who had given the examination that day. And the doctor looked at Larry King and said, I want to tell you something. The guy's blood pressure is normal. Wow. This is all an act. It was all an act, and
well,
he pulled it off.
He did pull it off because, you know, us in baseball, you don't want to say anything to antagonize the opponent or say, now you got to live up to what you said. And this man did it routinely. It's amazing.
I'd like Ventura the other day with Machado. How about that? And just drilled him, and here comes Machado. Yeah. Tonight we're getting a little more of this kind of stuff. I know baseball doesn't like it.
Yeah, well, you know, they've done away with it a little bit because of, you know, the rules that are in place. We talked about before in the minor leagues, you can't throw at a hitter. You know, you were taught years ago, I mean, you knock a guy down, you hit him. Now the kids get fined down there, right? They're suspended. There's too much. So when they get to the major leagues, it's all new to them. And, you know, it's still a man's game out there on the field. And you know, you look at the Dodgers and one guy who everybody loves to hate when he's on the other side, but he's a throwback, and it's Chase Utley.
Yeah.
Chase Utley plays a game like that. You throw a pitch close to him, you know, he'll lean into it to get on base to win the game.
Yeah.
And you don't see a lot of that today, but there's guys out there that will still do it, and that's the competitive nature of sport.
Good point.
Boy, he didn't move very much Friday night when that ball bounced in the dirt. Chase Utley.
No, he's not going to move. He's not going to move. I mean, Chase is a throwback that way. He plays the game hard. As I said, you know, he's a guy who on the other side, you love to hate him. But I guarantee if he's playing on your team, you like the intangibles that he brings because he's ready to play the game of baseball.
Ron, let me ask you just a couple of silly ones. This week down at Petco Park, it was the Braves playing the Padres, and Snoop Doggy Dog came out wearing the Goose Gossage Fu Manchu, and he threw out the first pitch, and it was miserable. It was embarrassing. And we've seen that before. You'd think 50 Cent in New York City at Citi Field. These guys that you would think are great athletes can't throw out a first pitch. Why do you think the first pitch for a civilian is so doggone awful? And what's the worst first pitch you've seen here at AT&T?
Oh, boy. Well, I know one thing. It's not easy to throw a baseball.
Yeah.
Right?
From a mound, right? Yeah.
From anywhere. I mean, you see a lot of different throwing strokes in your career. And I know if you can't throw the baseball, you don't get to the major league. So, you know, it looks easy, but it's not a natural motion. Why Snoop Dogg doesn't do it, I have no idea. He has played in a lot of celebrity softball games. I've seen him over the years softball games. So, I don't know. Maybe he was too amped up. It was the pressure of the crowd down there in Petco. I have no idea what happened, but thinking about first pitches here, nothing comes to mind, but I'll tell you one that comes to mind that our good friend Tim Flannery used to talk about.
Okay.
And we talk about throwing batting practice all the time. As coaches, you know, we throw batting practice and guys get surgery and they have bad arms and, you know, we get tired of throwing BP. And Flann would always say, I don't need to throw BP. You can get a monkey to throw batting practice. I don't need to throw BP. I'm here for other things. Well, sure enough, he said, in San Diego one day from the San Diego Zoo, first pitch was thrown out by a chimpanzee. So Flann was exactly right. And the monkey threw a strike. So it's a little bit overrated. I don't know why the monkey can throw a strike, but Snoop Dogg can't.
That's great. One more for you, Ron, for me. It's just this week, Brandon Belt put one in the drink. Splash hit number 69. The fans went bananas. So did Brandon Belt. What did you guys think? What did the senior members of the Giants think of Splash Hit 69?
Well, we're not seeing enough of them, I think, is what we're thinking, you know?
Okay.
We saw them routinely, right, when Barry was hearing guys, and you know, I don't know how many Brandon has had, but he's got the capability to do it. There's no doubt about it. And we'd like to get that mark up over 100.
Okay, well.
I think it was...
Ron's too mature to laugh about number 69, and I appreciate that.
I don't know what you're talking about.
He's a diplomat. He's a diplomat. All right, let's hear it for the bench coach of the Giants.
Good stuff.
Ron Wotus. Boy, well, terrific. Very good. Very good. Have a great day today,
and
we'll talk to you in a couple of weeks. Let's see, Tampa Bay, Pittsburgh, and we'll see you back for the Phillies.
That's right.
Great. Look
for the Phillies right here.
Thanks, guys.
That's Ron Wotus, the bench coach of the Giants. More coming up on the Sports Leader.